This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio. It's February Wednesday. February 17th. It's a Wednesday. I'm Patrick Johnston. We don't have a name.
We don't.
It's Eric McKenzie. Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. No complaints. You know, living the dream. It's rainy out. It was nice yesterday.
Yeah. We got the short end of the stick today, didn't we?
I hate these days. As I was telling you coming in, like, I never know how to dress. Sort of, you know, it's 9 degrees and it's going to be 11. Do wear a hat.
I don't know.
Tough life.
It is.
Eric, let's see. Interesting days in Canucks land. I don't think we're going to go too long on Canucks, but to me, it's part of the bigger question, which is what I wanted to talk about today, which is Vancouver sports in general, because, you know, the Lions have been sending a few things out. Whitecaps are getting ready to go. You know, there are other, obviously other teams in the marketplace, other things happening. But the Canucks, I mean, people, there's nothing like a train wreck, I suppose is the best way to put it. You know, I look at the traffic we've done in terms of readership, you know, Botch obviously with the Provies and knowing what he could throw out there and the interest just people have in general with the team when things are going wrong. I mean, I wasn't here during the 2011 run, so I can't tell you, you know, what the website looked like then, but I can certainly tell you in the sort of 3 years that I've been involved in this, and mostly been terrible stuff, people do love a mess.
Well, it's a lot more fun to dissect a mess than maybe a middling team or trying to find reasons to pick apart a winning team, I guess. There's a lot more for sure. And especially with the position that the Canucks are in at this point of the season with the trade deadline less than 2 weeks away now, you're going to bring out all the armchair GMs and try and get everyone's going to be out there trying to digest the range of opinions that's out there about what this team should do next, because they really are at a critical juncture here. So it's not surprising that they've got as many eyeballs on them right now as they do, even though they're not a good team.
The what if game, you know, the old time open phones game, you know, like, let's see what we, and it's not just about trades, it's about what should we do in this lineup. And to me, that's the more general statement. And I look at, you know, I obviously look at Twitter a lot, but I also think about what friends say on Facebook, and the discussion at the same time isn't exactly there. People know what, in this case, people know what they want. I think as a general rule, when it comes to most things in life, people can identify what they want, but they can't really identify how they're going to get there. What are the costs to get there? With the Canucks, they just want them to be better. And at the same time, I find it interesting. I mean, all season, I've been asking people, you know, we put polls up on, you know, the Morning Skate and things like that, and or on Twitter. And people generally, you know, it's been like 80% would say, yes, we don't care about the playoffs. We just want the Canucks to get a good draft pick. To me, there is no discussion. If that's what people want, and yet the team kind of carries on as if, you know, they can play both sides of the coin. And I don't really get why you would try to play both sides of the coin when it's so clear that people don't want that other side.
One would think that this past week or 2 weeks, so far how February has gone, maybe has made the decision up for management. I don't know that you're going to hear so much of the both sides of the coin for the next couple of weeks, but it's a challenge because, like you said, how are you going to get there? And it's not as simple as, well, we'll just move some guys out and bring some guys in. We'll collect some picks. The two best assets that they have are guys that can essentially block a move out of town if they want to. So they are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place that way, in that it's not as black and white as to how, there's not exactly a predetermined roadmap of how you get this franchise back to success.
I think the other thing is just kind of the sex appeal, if you will. I mean, for a long time, this team was top of the heap. I think they still are top of the heap. I don't think there's even anybody even close. But you look at the building, you look at the empty seats, you look at the sort of lack of engagement. I don't quite know what the word is, but you look at, you know, you mentioned the schedule and the teams coming up aren't exactly the most appealing. Now, I don't know how important opposing teams really all that are in terms of selling tickets. I think generally it's the home team and how they're performing and the expectation of a win, especially in this. I don't know if that's different from other markets, but certainly in this market.
Well, yeah, you wonder too how much of their awful home record has been a real issue for them trying to fill seats as well, because where they've lost, what, five in a row at home now. And people come to the rink and do not have a good experience, and winning is part of a good experience, then I don't think they're going to be as apt to come back and shell out money to come and see a team lose again, see their team lose again.
You're originally from Winnipeg.
I am.
And I think it's known how popular, at least for most of the last 5 years, the Jets have been. Mm-hmm. And not just in terms of, you know, people want to go, but people wanting to go and be engaged, and the fan experience there has been noted by many others as being, if not unique, among the best. Is there something you can put your finger on about Winnipeg itself or about Winnipeg fans that has made that such a vibrant feeling in that building?
I think a big part of it was just the way that the town rallied around having a team again. I mean, that was a huge thing. I mean, being a young kid, having a team ripped away at age 10 for me, I mean, it was a pretty awful thing to have to experience. And it was and when the team came back, it wasn't surprised at all the way it was embraced. But I do feel like I went to a game over the Christmas break. I went home for Christmas this year and went to go see the Red Wings play the Jets. The building was full, but you could tell that the honeymoon period is over there too. Like there, it was loud, but it wasn't as crazy loud as I'd seen in the first couple seasons. It wasn't quite what you'd become accustomed to hearing about Winnipeg. So I think people there are starting to, now that they've kind of gotten over the thrill of having a team back again, they're starting to take that critical eye to their team as well.
Were there still chants though? You know, I mean, I think that was one of the things that struck me about Winnipeg. The Winnipeg fan base was that there seemed to be a real creativity in there, and then people really got on board with not just doing the, I mean, being loud is one thing, but being loud with, you know, an actual, you know, sort of sustainable energy and some creativity in what you're saying to me is a whole other thing. And I felt like that was something that Winnipeg had that most other markets don't.
For sure. And I don't know if there's been as much of that over the last couple of seasons, but I mean, it is still there a little bit, but I mean, it's a lot easier to embrace a team that's not necessarily successful when you haven't had them around for almost two decades. Whereas this market now went through a period where it was fairly spoiled with a pretty good team for a lot of years. And it's, I think, difficult for a lot of fans to maybe see parts of that old 2011 team that's still attached to this current team. And it's making that transition between eras almost that is difficult to sell to fans right now.
Did you ever read Fever Pitch by Nick Hornby? I know there was a movie that was starred Jimmy Fallon and was totally different from the book. Did you ever read the book?
No, I didn't.
So it's an interesting book about Nick Hornby, obviously being a British writer, mostly, you know, most famous, I think, for books that became movies, like about a boy. I'm drawing a blank now, Record Shop with John Cusack.
High Fidelity.
He also wrote a book called Fever Pitch, which was about his sort of childhood, especially fandom of Arsenal. And, you know, he was a guy that grew up in a smaller town south of London, had no particular reason to become an Arsenal fan when he did, other than, you know, I can't remember the exact reason, but it was one of these, you know, he was a young boy and, you know, he saw their shirt and saw them on TV and was like, well, I want to cheer for them. And there was one of the players, you know, I mean, it's kind of how it goes. And he, you know, you would get kind of grief from locals because there was a small town team and people are like, well, you should support your team. And he would get on the train and he would go up and watch Arsenal games. And he talked about the sense of community and what that meant. But he also went in, you know, it was interesting because he talked about, you know, how you support your team and how that changes. Because he also talked about him growing into adulthood and, you know, talking about how you do start seeing the local team because there's just other things happening in your life and that kind of thing. And how you adopt your fandom has to do with success as well. Soccernomics. Did you read Soccernomics?
No, I haven't read
another good one, which looks a lot at kind of the numbers to turn to, you know, the power of economics onto especially soccer fandom, but fandom in general. And one of the things they also looked at was how strong is your club loyalty? You know, are people born into a club and then that's it forever? And what they found was actually no, that there is always a hardcore, but that most fans are very transient, that their interest wanes, especially as success goes. So, you know, with this team where they're not that interesting, they're not winning. I mean, what, one regulation win in this season, which was a stunning number.
At home.
At home. Yeah. That's right. At home against the Western Conference, right? So against your main rivals, you've won once at home this season, which is just a stunning number. There's not a lot to go for here. So in many ways, it's a battle you can't win anyway as a fan. But that's what I found interesting when I think about Winnipeg, because it is something I don't know about. And as you said, they're not doing that great right now. So, interest is going to wane. But on that point, Vancouver has so many other things to do. And it's especially true, I think, in the last, say, 15 years. As someone who grew up here and thinking about how things used to be and now things, there's just so many more things. It's not just that there's more money, but there's more things to do. Mm-hmm. People go skiing. There's so much more skiing around. People go on trips. People like to go outside. I mean, I wonder if that's a factor, too, in Winnipeg's success, in that is there a whole lot else to do in Winnipeg in the winter? No. Other than go to the Jets?
No.
Right?
Well, there's not. I mean, people in Winnipeg are pretty hardy, and they're not scared of the outdoors in the wintertime, but surely inside an NHL rink is a lot better place to be than out in minus 40 wind chill.
Right.
But it was when the team left in the mid 90s, it was clear how much that city had built its identity around that team to a certain extent, and just because of the fact that having a team in one of the major four leagues gave them a certain amount of legitimacy as a North American center, basically as a big city, I guess. And when that was taken away, it kind of took Winnipeg off the map. So I think, whereas with Vancouver, it has a lot more qualities that it can hang its hat on in terms of its international reputation. So I think that's a big part. It's the one thing that everyone wants to be a part of in Winnipeg. So it does make a little bit of sense the way that the community kind of rallies around the team there.
How do the Blue Bombers fit into that in the summertime? I mean, I think there's always been other options I know in Winnipeg. Like, there's been baseball.
It still is.
And there still is baseball, which is a unique fan base. And I think it's also true in Vancouver. Steve Ewan and I have talked a lot about the Canadians and the kind of role they fill. And the connection that certainly the Canadians have with, people sort of my age who remember the World Series from their youth and in a way that at an age range that is important in terms of, again, looking at studies on how people become fans, that if there is a team you're going to lock into, it's around that age, 10, 11, 12. So, when people my age were watching the Blue Jays, they were winning the World Series. And there's a connection there with the game, but also the fact that they're a Blue Jays team, I think, has some connections. So, they've got a unique little set. We've seen the Whitecaps. We know what they're about. The number of people, for instance, I know last year who still went only just last year went to their first ever game and said, wow, this is really fun. This is really different. That culture, that organic kind of singing culture that they've been able to develop, by encouraging the Southsiders and Curva Collective and the other fan groups that are involved there to create something that's different. There's people that go to the game, they don't go to be in the crowd, but they go to be near that crowd, and mm-hmm. they like the atmosphere and they like the noise. We've talked a lot about the Lions in recent years here at Problem Sports, and the challenges they're facing and the change, in sort of the demographics of who really their fans are, that they're getting older. The Giants, I think, actually do struggle a lot in that way, that they've lost a connection with younger people. I mean, I was at a game recently. I couldn't believe, that all the fans were kind of like our parents' age.
Yeah,
And
maybe a lot of younger parents with younger kids. Right. But there's that generational gap that's missing.
That age range of kids who are kind of 15 to 25, the kind of kids that you want to be, hey, this is, fun and not that expensive and a good night out, I don't know how many of our listeners out there have dealt with teenagers, but teenagers don't generally have a lot of money, and they're cheap, and that they go for maximum value, and maximum value is in many ways what everybody's looking for.
I think that to a certain extent too, I would think that the Giants might do a little better with maybe a more convenient location than at Pacific Coliseum, because a lot of people in that younger age bracket are probably looking for, easy transit to the game. When I lived in Ottawa, I went to a lot of 67s games. I lived right near the rink. I lived about a 10-minute walk away, but it was right on a main. It was right on a main drag in Ottawa, so it was easy to get to. And a lot of people, a lot of younger people, would come to the games there. So I think plays into part of it.
When were you in Ottawa?
I was there 2004 to 2008.
So I'm trying to think about the centers. Centers were pretty good. They weren't as good.
That was
prime time.
Yeah, centers? That was okay. That was like the Alfredson, Spezza, Heatley right. years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, I think about maybe a couple of years before that when it was, you know, the Canucks and the Senators, you know, were like among the league's best, and those games every year were pretty amazing mm-hmm. games. Okay, so you're in there. You're in with the Senators. I mean, what was it going like to a Senators game? Was it a sellout every night?
I wouldn't say a sellout every night because, I mean, usually I could get – there were a few nights where I could walk up to the window and buy a $20 standing room ticket
okay.
and just go stand above the upper deck to watch okay. the game. But it was
but the seats were full.
The seats were full, yeah. And okay. I mean, I think there's a bit of a myth that there are no actual Senators fans out there. And right. I think it's just because they get drowned out by all the noise around the Maple Leafs in Ontario. And I know that Senators fans always would get frustrated at when the Leafs were in town that half the building is filled with Toronto fans. But they've got that regional history to battle against that's been in place for a century. So,
yeah. A lot of Western Canada's like that.
Absolutely. Especially during those years, the vibe around the team was pretty good because they were a good team. And I was there for the 1 year where they made their cup run. People really, really, you know, bought in and went for the ride with the Senators during those years. I can't speak to what the climate of the fan base is like now, but they had the community similarly rallied around them. And when that was their only really legitimate sports option because the Renegades didn't count.
Yeah. If we just cycle back to my question about the Blue Bombers, you know, which I guess I lost myself, but how do the Blue Bombers fit into that Winnipeg marketplace?
I think they've always been a huge important piece of it. And especially during those years when there was no NHL team and they were essentially the only game in town with apologies to the baseball team. But even if they weren't very good, there's not really that much else to discuss on the sports scene there. I mean, like I said, the baseball team there does well, but they're kind of like the Canadians in a sense that a lot of like they've built a nice facility there and the fan experience is really good. So, but people don't necessarily follow the team from game to game the same way. Whereas the going to a Bomber game was an event and it still is. Like I look at my Facebook after a weekend where the Bombers have had a home game and I see tons of friends who are around my age, around 30, that are still going to games, and that's a huge event for them to go out. So it's different on the prairies. I mean, there's the Canadian football is always ruled there. So, but it's not, they don't seem to have the same problems that the Lions have in terms of generating that interest among the younger fan base.
What makes it an event? I mean, I find it interesting. You said two things that I found intriguing. You said fan experience when you were talking about going to Bombers game, and then you just talked about how it was an event. I mean, what makes those things happen?
I think part of it is just having a summer night out mm-hmm. at the stadium because there is. I mean, the summers in Winnipeg are great, but the amount of time that you can really enjoy yourself outside there across the 12 months of the year is limited. So I think that's a big part of it. It's just, it is a social gathering. I mean, there are, I don't know if you like paid attention at all to like the beer snake phenomenon that has taken off there at various times. And that's all driven by young people in the stands. And they have sort of created their own fun atmosphere there. Inside the stadium. So, I mean, it does seem like it's more of a social thing. Whereas like here, if like you're going to a Lions game, it's like, well, you're just going to watch football.
It sounds almost a bit like what people sort of say about Blue Jays games these days. Like, you know, that the Jays themselves were very conscious of who was near the stadium. There's a lot of condo towers near, you know, in that area of downtown. I guess that's downtown. I don't know. Someone undoubtedly is going to yell at me about that. But, you know, the Rogers Center is right there. It's right at Union Station. It's in the center of town. It's, you know, anybody can get there. But they also had a large community of people, you know, sort of young people around our age that were kind of living downtown looking for things to do. And the Blue Jays really attacked that demographic, partly because they also knew that a lot of these people had been kids, young kids when the Blue Jays were winning the World Series. And they were like, we need to rebuild this feeling here. But yeah, there are complaints from, you know, older fans from, you know, sort of veteran kind of reporters and whatever who say, you know, nobody's there to watch the game. They're just there to make noise. Yeah, well,
drink beers level, in the upper deck.
Right. You know, but I mean, as long as people are having fun, I mean, there's always a limit to it, right? But to me, that is exactly what you need more of. And I feel like, you know, when you look if you look at, you know, Rogers Arena where the Canucks play, the fact that, as people have always pointed out, they've got these bars that say, sit down, do not lean forward. Like, you are to sit in one way and one way only.
Right.
You know, that speaks to a mentality. Like, I get that they're sort of saying, listen, don't block people behind you, but like, there should be an expectation that, like, don't be a jackass. You know what I mean? Like, have some fun, but don't be a jackass. To me, having those rules that were literally the ushers will come up and enforce them. They'll be like, sit back. And you know, you think back, I mean, there's that famous example a couple seasons ago where a bunch of Southsiders went to Canucks fans or a Canucks game and said, we've bought a block of tickets. We're in the back. We're not blocking anybody. We're going to stand and sing the whole game. We're going to do like we do at a soccer game. And they got in trouble. And
I missed that. That might be before.
I think that might have been just before you started. Here. Yeah. And it was one of those ones where there was a lot of discussion about it because it was different. And the Canucks didn't know how to deal with it. And I remember there was a few stories about it. And a friend of mine was involved in it. And he was really mad because he's a Canucks fan. He's been a Canucks fan his whole life. And he said, let's go bring something different. You know, that the criticism of Rogers Arena is that it's quiet. It's boring. Nobody does anything different. So let's try to push the tempo a little bit. And, you know, they acknowledged and maybe they should have told the Canucks, hey, here's our plan. But I don't think they expected to be kind of rejected so resoundingly the way they were. And to me, that in the end comes back to, I don't know what it is. I mean, at that point too, the Canucks were still doing okay. You know, they weren't as miserable as they are now, but there was buzz, and here's people trying to be buzzed into the building, and all of a sudden they're told, nope, stop.
And the thing about the Southsiders too, is I get all of that. And it kind of speaks to a little bit to even in Winnipeg and people, younger people embracing the Bombers there, is this, it's all organic, and that's what makes it fun. And I like I said, I hadn't heard that story before, but I mean, you can't really force your fans to enjoy themselves at the game. And that's the one thing that you do like about the different supporters groups at Whitecaps games is they found a way to make the game enjoyable no matter what's happening on the field.
I know that people at the Lions think about this stuff and that they are very aware of the challenging demographics they currently have. So, you know, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch, you know, and I think going forward, we'll see maybe how things play out here. But, you know, I don't think hope is lost for this marketplace. You know, you look elsewhere in Canada, as you just said, that there's lots of places around the country where people have a good time no matter what's going on. You know, I mean, it's not like the Bombers were hugely successful.
No, they haven't. Right? They haven't won a Grey Cup since 1990.
Right. So, you know, winning is a lot, but it's not everything. It's somehow finding an atmosphere and nailing stuff down. To me, it's elusive, but at the same time, I don't feel like it should be that hard.
For the Lions too. I mean, if you're asking what the biggest difference is between going to a Whitecaps game and going to a CFL game right now, it's the pace of the game. It can get painfully slow at CFL games sometimes. Whereas a Whitecaps game, you know, you're in for 2 hours. It's over. There's constant action. But I think it's tough at any CFL game to if especially with the when the interest is waning a little bit to capture the attention the same way when it drags out over 3 hours. There's constant stoppages. There's too many flags. So I can see why people would gravitate towards the Whitecaps more in this market at the time, just right now, just because of that fan experience is better, just because of the way that the game is presented in the first place.
Now, I've brought it up before, and obviously it is a bit unfair to compare anything to the NFL, but one of the takeaways I had from my experience at the Broncos, I went to a Broncos game last November. They played the Chiefs in Denver. It was a beautiful day, which helped. And this was Peyton Manning's worst ever game. He literally had a passer rating of zero. This was the game where he had 4 interceptions and he couldn't throw, and he should have had probably 6 interceptions, and they pulled him in the second half. And
so you got to see a historic Manning performance.
It was a historic Manning performance, and for a brief time, my buddy and I actually thought, that's kind of amazing. We might have seen his last ever game. But the thing that I mean, the game obviously you remember because there's all that. There's historic to it. You know, we got to watch an NFL game. I mean, NFL football is pretty amazing no matter what. We got to see this incredible Denver defense that, nonetheless, Alex Smith did just enough. The Chiefs did just enough to win. But the fan, being in the stands, we were, you know, high up in the upper deck towards one of the end zones. And it was like you're in the world's largest living room. When I was describing it to my brother, that's how he said, that's kind of his reaction, was that, you know, you don't know any of these people, but there's banter and there was a sort of an attitude and some fun and people were enjoying themselves. And I, admittedly, I haven't been to a Lions game in a while, but I don't really, I've never really felt quite the same energy. You know, and it, I don't know how you get that. Maybe it's just that, you know, we kind of, maybe Vancouver, we're still, you know, we have this tradition of being a bit too conservative, a bit too staid, a bit too kind of sit in your hands and be calm. But I have a hard time believing that, given, like I said, the way things go at Canadiens games, the kind of boisterousness that's there, the boisterousness that there's at Whitecaps games. There's a way to do it. I don't necessarily know if I have the solution, but there is a way to do it. You can see it happen.
Well, I think that the move that they did last year by closing the upper bowl was probably a good start. Because when you concentrate all the energy closer to the field that way, then it's from the fans anyway, then it's a little, it does bring the atmosphere up a little bit, but then they ran into the problem of not being able to sell even close to all the tickets in the lower bowl. So it's, I mean, the more empty seats you have, and this is true at Canucks games too, the more dead the building is going to be. I mean, you're talking about the Jets and the way the fans embrace the team there. I mean, the game that I went to, like I mentioned, it was noticeable how much less energy the fans have there now, but those 15,000 in the building that night made a lot more noise than any crowd of 17,000 that I've seen at Rogers Arena this year.
Before we go, I'm just looking at a couple of points you brought up here. Is there any hope for the Canucks?
I don't think so. I think there was hope for them at the start of this month, because really their schedule could not be any softer in February than it is. And the goalies
are playing well.
And the goalies have been great, but they've completely blown it. You look back to the trade deadline and they were 2 points out, and they had a run of games against Columbus and Toronto and, you know, a struggling Minnesota team upcoming.
Lost 8 in a row and they lost badly.
Yeah, new coach. I mean, of course, they didn't know a new coach at the time then. But, I mean, it was reasonable to think...
The players are the players. I mean, performance, you know, is a trend.
For sure. But it was reasonable to assume that you were going to win at least half of those games, and they've completely blown it, I think, at this point. I think this is the week where they've played themselves out of the conversation for the playoffs.
David Ostead re-signed yesterday. Blas Perez signed for a year. Mark and I are apologies, folks, those of us who tried to listen to Whitecaps Weekly yesterday. It was a disaster in recording, and Mark and I are about to re-record a new one. But David Ostead, you know, I mean, it's a good sign. He admits he still wants to maybe chase, you know, a higher ambitions in Europe. But he said, listen, I'm here right now. I like this team. Bit of a weird angle in terms of presenting a player, you know, saying, listen, he's here for at least two, you know, we've signed him for at least another two seasons. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll go somewhere else, but he's here for now. But I mean, at a certain level, I guess that's kind of soccer. Guys are always kind of saying, you know, if an all right offer comes along, they're honest about it, I suppose.
I guess that's always the challenge or the danger when you're not the top league in the world. Yeah. That there's always the chance that you're going to lose your best players to greener pastures. But I think for all the talk that there's been of the Whitecaps trying to go out and add pieces that way, I mean, they've kind of quietly locked up their three most important defensive players since the end of last season in Laba, Ostead, and Waston. So they're pretty well, I mean, that's a pretty good foundation to work with. I mean, that's been their strength the last couple seasons, has been their defensive play and goalkeeping. So, I mean, that does set them up pretty well to, I mean, I can't remember who had said seen it like by, but having those three guys just pretty much guarantees that they should get back in the playoffs, provided they all stay healthy.
Well, they got to score. But I mean, you know what, just to come back to the main theme of the podcast before we go, you know, think about them now. Say this offensive extra firepower actually does work out. You know, all of a sudden they're scoring goals, and they're making, it's even more exciting than it already is. I mean, that, talk about setting yourself up just right to kind of really seize a spot in the marketplace.
Yeah, if they get off to a strong start this season again, this could really be year of the Whitecaps if they in town here, if they really figure it out early and start building some momentum.
All right, Eric, always a slice. At Eric McKenzie on Twitter.
That's right.
M-A-C.
M-A-C. Eric with a C, McKenzie with an A.
Like it. Yeah. I'm at Rising Action. Of course, you can phone and find us at problemsports.com/radio. We're on iTunes, look for Problem Sports. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on TuneIn. If you do listen to us through iTunes, please rate and review us. It always helps us bump up the list.